Love that last line, our every breath, gift of spirit, for this we stand. Beautiful. So our theme this month is resilience. You know, you have to love the internet. I Googled resilience just to see what came up, and I got a website with the URL www.verywell.com. The title of the page was Cope with Stress and Become More Resilient. And then it had a grid-like listing that read degree of difficulty, and then tab, average. And then below that, time required, tab, ongoing. Resilience, degree of difficulty, average. It was like reading an online recipe, you know, where it says number of ingredients, 6. Time to make, 15 minutes. Only this was an article about us, about how to manage our lives, how to find the capacity of resilience, of putting one foot in front of the other on a regular basis, no matter what. Degree of difficulty, average. Time required, ongoing. How is it they figure the degree of difficulty is average, I wondered. They clearly haven't been reading the papers. Or for that matter, heard about my latest crisis. This year we've been considering the idea of change, how it is present in our lives, how it impacts us as individuals and as a congregation. The 2016-2017 year seemed a good time to consider change, both for where we are as a community and certainly for this time in our country and our world. That has been our overarching theme, and so then from underneath that, our monthly themes, some of them have included, for example, humility, and then discovery of perhaps what is lost and found in change. We opened in January with intention, how we might plan to greet the new. We covered compassion for ourselves and each other. Last month, joy. And now in May, resilience. One might imagine that the most consistent challenge to resilience is change. How do we bounce back? What provides us the strength or courage or imagination to manage events in our personal lives that unsettle or upend us? Or events in the public sphere that we share? The reading from Thomas Merton this morning suggests that at present, at this time in which we are living, we are in an endless cycle of upheaval with a profound spiritual crisis for the whole world. For those of you not familiar with Thomas Merton, let me fill you in just a little bit. Merton chose the life of a Catholic monk well into his adulthood, following many years of privilege, though years not without loss. He chose to retreat to an order that stressed simplicity in living, manual labor, and contemplation. I thought when I was reading it, if I could take Dan with me, it sounded quite alluring, actually. He was, if you will, an explorer of the frontiers of human self-understanding. How wonderful to have time to consider that. He became a contemplative, but unable to divide himself from the world as it is, he was also a political activist, social visionary, and a literary figure. Relative to the spiritual crisis that he referenced in this morning's reading, I think he was and continues to be strangely on point. For the last 50 years, we in our Western culture, at least, have been on this very curious trajectory of needing or wanting or feeling that we ought to have more. Bigger, better, newer, faster, shinier, brighter, cooler, hipper. And many in our culture have extricated themselves from the need to engage in the spiritual implications of any of that wanting. The Greeks were not as smart as we are, Merton suggests. In their primitive way, they put Tantalus in hell. So many of you may remember that Tantalus was a legendary Greek king of Lydia, who was punished for offenses against the gods by being made to stand in Hades within reach of food and drink that moved away whenever he tried to touch it. So the Greeks, Merton reminds us, were not as smart as we are. They put Tantalus in hell. Madison Avenue, on the contrary, would convince us that Tantalus is in heaven. That just out of reach thing, he suggests, that bright and shiny just around the corner, just enough better than what we already have. If we only worked a little harder, we could have it and it would be great. Merton's analyses often raised the tension between the consumer life and the spiritual life. He determined that in general, and tragically, the consumer life was winning. So the obvious question for us this morning is how that shift inclines us, or not, to resilience when life doesn't offer us all that we imagined it might or should. Even beyond the idea of the shiny penny, what about our health or our relationships? When the going gets tough, how are we prepared to respond? The reading I chose this morning made me think of an experience I had years ago with a Werner Erhard training. Does that ring a bell for anybody? You might have to be of a certain generation, I'm not sure. It was not so much the content of this training as the process that I was reminded of. So I wonder if any of you may have attended, as I did, a seminar called The Shot Heard Round the World. It was Werner Erhard and Est's answer to world hunger. It was supposed to solve it all. So in 1979, I went to this seminar. You entered the hall, and it was this enormous hall, by way of a long black tunnel. There was like a curtain, and it was supposed to usher you from the real world into this space of thinking. There was a massive video screen on the far wall of the event room, which was itself an enormous room filled with people. And when Werner Erhard's picture came up on the video, everybody started clapping, even though he wasn't there. It was a video. I thought, why are you all clapping? And he spent 3 hours telling us about what a dire place the world was and how much pain and suffering existed and how much carelessness and indifference, and that it was not likely any one of us really had the capacity to change any of that, being small and inconsequential as we were. I don't remember too many of the specifics. I just remember it was sad and self-defeating. Remember Merton's words? Desperation, cynicism, violence, conflict, self-contradiction, ambivalence. So then they let us out of the room for lunch. And it was a beautiful day in Honolulu, so I thought, maybe I'll just go home now. That might feel better. I was discouraged and I was feeling fairly hopeless about the state of the world and totally hopeless about my ability to do anything about it. Who, I wondered, needed more of that? And a little like Merton's reading this morning, I felt saddened. And then when we re-entered, because I didn't leave, again, through the tunnel of possibility, Werner spent the next several hours reminding us of our unique capacity to make a difference, of our individual potential to do good in the world, to change the desperate course of human events. We were told, thank goodness, that we had agency and capacity and even resilience. You can imagine how much better we felt. Well, I guess I felt better by the end of the afternoon, but on the whole, I remember feeling a bit manipulated, to be honest. But what was it I was looking for to begin with, I wondered. In this setup of dire circumstance and the need for solution, why did I need someone to utilize a crisis in order to remind me of my own potential? And sadly, as far as I know, we didn't end world hunger. I will say that his trainings went on to create an organization that even family members of my own have appreciated and found value in. So lest I entirely disparage all of that work. But I suspect I already knew I had agency and capacity. I knew I could be resilient. The problem is, in the depths of the environment, I forgot. In the toughness, I lost track of my capacity. I wonder if somehow that may feel familiar to some of you, that when we are in the midst of challenge, we lose sight of our capacity to overcome. I want to share with you a poem from Robert Weston. There is a living web that runs through us to all the universe, linking us each with each and through all life on to the distant stars. Each knows a little corner of the world and lives as if this were their all. We no more see the farther reaches of the threads than we see of the future, yet they're there. Touch but one thread, no matter which. The thoughtful eye may trace to distant lands its firm, continuing strand, yet lose its filaments as they reach out, but find at last it coming back to that from which it led. We move as in a fog, aware of self, but only dimly conscious of the rest as they are close to us in sight or feeling. New objects loom up for a time, face in and out. Then sometimes, as we look on unawares, the fog lifts, and there's the web in shimmering beauty, reaching out past all horizons. We catch our breath, we stretch out our eager hands, and then in comes the fog again, and we go on, feeling a little foolish, doubting what we had seen. The hands were right. The web is real. Our folly is that we so soon forget. Distracted by the perils of the day and ignoring our connection to each other and to all things, we forget. We neglect our ability to overcome by attending instead to matters that in the long run are less significant. Thomas Merton painted a dark picture, even as it is, I believe, a realistic one. We do that too, though perhaps on a smaller scale. We all experience personal losses and challenges. Small and not so small personal losses happen all the time. And we are impacted by the large scale ones, even if we didn't predict them. We know that now more than ever. Is it enough for someone to remind us that we have the capacity for resilience, for finding joy or health or well-being despite all that life presents us with? Are there not skills we might nurture to increase our resilience? Well, of course, that Google search gave me a list. Resilient people are aware of self and others, aware of their environment. Resilient people understand that life is full of challenges. They are open and flexible. They are willing to adapt. They have strong social connections. Resilient people maintain perspective. All good things to work on. And the truth is, these are not useful only for when the going gets tough, but for every day. That world that Merton described is here, whether we like it or not. And as he mentioned, we are not free to avoid it. But I do also want to suggest two things that incline us to the attributes of resilience, to awareness, to understanding, to openness, to flexibility. The first is humility, an often undervalued and certainly underpracticed approach to life. Humility inclines us to remember the constraints of our deserving, of blessing or challenge. Let us not be so bold as to imagine that either our successes or our trials are entirely self-generated. That is, let us not be so bold as to imagine that we are in control of this life. Let us be humble before the mystery of it all. Which reminds us, of course, as Mark Morrison Reed's reading did this morning, we are all dying. Our lives are all moving toward completion. That real and humble sense of mortality inclines us to resilience, if only because we feel deep in our bones, it would be a tragedy to miss the short party that we have been invited to begin with. We dare not, in Morrison Reed's words, squander the lives we have been miraculously given. We like the big solutions, of course, the definitive answers, the Werner Erhard big and boldness. But resilience is internal. It's quiet, it's determined, it's humble. Resilience feeds on gratitude. It's not simple, and it's not always easy. But we find it within. Not when someone outside of us says we have agency or that we are able to cure world hunger, but in the daily challenges before us that remind us of the web that is our reality. Merton is right. We are in a time of shift, of enormous, unprecedented upheaval. And it is weighing on us in ways we could not have imagined. Surviving it requires a fortitude of spirit. Like our UUA co-presidents whose words are on the covers of your orders of service, we are called to act as if love is real and by our living, make it so. Remember the story of the hummingbird and the elephant? I'll remind you. What are you doing lying there with your legs in the air? The elephant asks. I heard the sky is falling, replies the hummingbird, and I'm doing what I can. With humility and the awareness that mortality is ever at hand, resilient indeed. Don't let us spend our time in defeat. Humble, grateful, and willing, may we also rise to the occasions before us. Degree of difficulty, it's entirely up to you. Time required. Ongoing, yes. Engaged and hopeful, may it be so. Amen.